Welcome to the Gurr and Fangirl Podcast, a podcast where we discuss pop culture and fandom. Each episode, we talk with celebrities, fans, and creators about their work in the media that inspires them. Now here's your host, the creator of The Squee Project, filmmaker, fangirl, and feminist, Hansi Oppenheimer.
Hey, it's Hansi, and today my guest is filmmaker Jen Wexler. We discuss her fabulous first feature, The Ranger, currently screening on Shudder, working with women crews, and a brief history of punk rock and film. So here we go. I watched The Ranger last night, and I watched it sort of cold. I didn't know anything about it, hadn't heard anything about it. I just, you know, watched Shudder and, you know, had seen Shudder saying, you know, The Ranger coming this day, and I was like, that looks really interesting. And it was.
Cool. Thank you for watching.
Yeah, really interesting film. So I watched a couple of your interviews today. You sort of talking about the process of, you know, that was a screenplay that someone you had gone to school with had originally come up with, and then you two worked together on it later to update it and bring it up to, you know, what it became. So tell me about that. You know, tell me about the process of making it and you know, making your first feature. And
yeah. I went to college at the University of the Arts in Philadelphia, and I studied screenwriting. And one of my friends in the class, Jocko Farino, he wrote this as his senior screenplay. We all had to write our own screenplays, and we workshopped them in class. And I was just a total fan of his screenplay. I just love the idea of these punks that go up against this park ranger. And I was like, yo, that's a good idea. I hope you get an A on your project. And then, you know, we graduated. We had to get real jobs. And then years went by, and I started working for a production company, Glass Eye Picks.
Larry Fessenden.
Yep, Larry Fessenden. So they kind of took me under their wing and showed me how to produce movies, and I produced like 5 features at Glass Eye. And meanwhile, I was wanting to direct my first feature, and I remembered Jocko's screenplay, and I asked him if he could find it and if we could work on it together. So while I was producing these other films, I started writing the screenplay with Jocko, and eventually, you know, we felt it was in a good enough place to start showing it to people and to start sharing it with finance people and actors and whatnot.
So it's a really interesting film because, because I didn't know anything coming in, so I didn't know, you know, what, you know, it was going to be, you know, punks against the ranger, that kind of thing. So, I you know, from the opening scene, you really don't know, you know, what the story is going to be. And then suddenly you're, you know, with all these punks and that's happening. And, it was really interesting to watch, you know, cold and not see it like, oh, it's going to be a stalker, you know, that it could go anyway. It could be a werewolf. It could be, you know, we don't know what's really going on here.
That's so cool. I feel like a lot of people who've seen it have seen the trailer or know a little bit about it. So it's so exciting to hear from somebody that had no idea what it was.
Yeah, no, I'm really glad. I sometimes feel like trailers kind of ruin it for you because then you have a preconceived notion of what the film should be, and then if it's not that, you know, then you're thrown off. But this was just like, oh, this is cool. And then, you know, the opening was so interesting. And then, you know, I was a punk in the '70s in New York, so I was like, oh, this is cool, a bunch of punks, you know, and they're acting like, you know, real punks, which you don't see very often.
Yeah. Well, we embrace a lot of the New York punk community in all levels of production. We shot at this club, Don Pedro, which used to have tons of punk shows there in Brooklyn. And one of the producers, Heather Buckley, is so deep in that community, and she got the community to come out and like be in our warehouse sequence. And then, you know, all the people that did all of our art, from the titles to the band patches to everything. I mean, that's what they do in general. That's their style. So it was really cool to just be able to, you know, work deeply with everybody who got it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even the van, you know, looked like friends, vans, people I knew who had vans, you know, bands I knew who had vans that looked like that.
Thank you. We kind of, with the van specifically, if you look closely, you'll see, like, references to Return of the Living Dead on there, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's, like, nice similar to the to the car in Return of the Living Dead. There's similar things on it.
Oh, that's awesome. I love Easter eggs like that. That's always really fun. Now I have to go back and watch it again. But I also love your heroine, who, I mean, she is amazing. You know, she's, you know, I don't want to ruin it for people, but man, you know, she rocked.
Yeah. Chloe Levine, who plays Chelsea, like, she's just such an awesome actress. And I saw her in this other movie, The Transfiguration. And her role in, which is like a vampire movie, her role in that movie is very different from Chelsea and the Ranger, but they're both kind of outsiders. And I recognized that in that role. And Chloe and I met, and we talked about the character of Chelsea, and we just, like, really clicked over the character. And then she is just so good at bringing so much nuance.
Oh, her face. I mean, she has, she kind of reminds me, like, in some moments of Amber Benson, you know, with this very sort of, you know, this wide-eyed sort of, but knowing wiseness.
Totally.
And then, you know, and she fucking defends herself with every, you know, breath, which I just love. I love seeing a woman character who doesn't, like, fall down and say, why are you doing this?
Yeah. No, it's important to us. We wanted to depict, you know, a final girl, but one that's, like, well, a punk rock final girl that does drugs and has had sex and is just kind of lost. She's just more, like, you know, in between worlds and trying to figure out what's next for her and not quite fitting in with her friend group. But she certainly has committed every sin in the book.
But that's also, like, you know, when you're in your 20s or, you know, early 20s, teens, whatever, you know, you don't fit in. You don't know where you fit in. You're trying to, but, you know, nobody does. And, you know, there's a lot of bravado. And I also liked you had some really good representation in the characters, which I really liked.
Yeah, that was something that when Jocko and I, my co-writer and I, found the script again, we started filling in the characters. Because originally his script was much more of a straight body count movie. Punks go to the woods, start getting killed one by one, and that's the structure. But we wanted to really infuse it with more than that. And so when we met up again and started talking about the script, we just decided then, as we were fleshing out the characters, that, like, Jerk and Abe were a couple, and they weren't being killed for any reason. Like, they're being killed because they're fucking playing loud music and being dicks in the woods, but it has nothing to do with their sexuality. And that's important for us, because I don't feel like sexuality should be used as, like, a plot point in movies. Like, I think that's a really dated idea.
Yeah, it's just a part of, you know, who they are, and then, you know, it's just part of the character, you know. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, they're just obnoxious punks, you know, spray paint. I mean, I did all that spray painting and all that shit, so.
Yeah, and they're just, like, they're just in that stage of life. I mean, when you're, like, you know, a 16, 18-year-old, like, and you're priding yourself on being a juvenile delinquent, you're kind of a dick. And that's, these guys were the, like, dicks that I used to find myself hanging around and feeling, like, peer pressured to laugh at their jokes and stuff. So it was cool to revisit these, like, traumatizing experiences from my youth of, like, having to hang out with these people and funnel it all into the screenplay.
So it's interesting. So you had Heather Buckley producing. So what's the experience? Because I tend to work with women as well, and I find that experience, I really love that experience. So how was that for you? I mean, do you work with her frequently, or was this the first time you guys worked together on a project?
Yeah, Heather is one of my best friends. This is the first time we worked together on a project, but when I was just in script stage and I was trying to figure out what to do with it, I showed it to her just as a friend, and she was so supportive, and she just started, you know, doing everything from sending me little images, like inspiration images for like my lookbook, to offering to share it with finance people that she knew. And she was really, in addition to Larry Fessenden, she was really one of the first supporters of the film. And then later on, when we got closer to production, we brought on another producer, Ashley Sneed. So the producers on the project are Larry Fessenden, Andrew Vandenhouten, and then Ashley and Heather. And Ashley and Heather were the producers that were on the ground. Like, Larry and Andrew weren't on set really that often. So making the movie, like, with our bare hands was, you know, me, Heather, and Ashley. And having so much of that feminine energy, we also had a lot of female crew, was really special and important, I think, to the overall product.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can feel it, you know, because the women are represented so well in the film. I think you can
Thank
get
you.
That.
Yeah.
So, how's it been for the, you know, the response you've been getting? When I mentioned it, you know, I started wrecking it, you know, as soon as I turned it off, I was like, everyone else has seen this movie. And a couple people were like, oh yeah, I saw it at Fantasia and it was great. So obviously lots of people have seen it. Have you been getting a great pop?
Yeah, it's been really cool. We world premiered last year at South by Southwest, and then we played like a ton of film festivals. Our approach was, we wanted, because it's a punk movie, we wanted to like go on tour with the movie. So we played, I think, over 50 festivals, and we got to go to a bunch of them, and it was cool just getting to like go to these places and meet people who connected with the film. And then some festivals would like throw us like punk shows and stuff after the screening, and it was a lot of fun. And then meanwhile, because we, you know, I kind of feel like this was a movie just concept wise that should have been made in the 80s, like Punks Against Park Ranger, we kind of embraced the idea of all the like 80s merch. So we have a vinyl that's coming out soon, and we have a VHS, and we have a novelization written by the writer Ed Kurtz that just came out. So it's been really cool exploring the full world of the Ranger, from the movie itself to all the ancillary stuff.
That's awesome. So so may I ask how old you are?
I'm 33.
Okay. So yeah, I saw somewhere you're from Brooklyn originally, right? Is that correct?
I grew up in New Jersey, but I live in Brooklyn now.
Okay. Yeah, I'm in Queens.
cool.
But, yeah, it's nice to see that, you know, the whole, because, you know, I did the whole 70s CBGBs thing, so it's nice to see that, you know, that aesthetic is still, you know, because I remember a lot of the movies that tried to do punk in the 80s. I mean, there were ones where really successful, like, you know, Repo Man or Sid and Nancy, but a lot of them just like did not they didn't get how funny punk is, you know. They kind of missed
right totally. Well, what we talk about a lot, Heather and I, is just the idea of like how, you know, punk, because of Hollywood, it went through this whole cyclical nature where you had punk, then you had Hollywood capitalizing on punk, and then you had punk copying Hollywood versions of punk. And it just kept going like that until you had this cartoonish understanding of punk. And that was, I mean, you know, we embraced the stereotypes of 80s punk movies. Like Class of 1984 is one of my favorite movies ever. You know, Return of the Living Dead.
Return of the Living Dead. Yeah, Linnea Quigley.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the
awesome
absurdity
in that. That's great.
yeah, the absurdity of Repo Man. Like, we wanted to really embrace these like punk tropes, and of course like slasher tropes, but then we wanted to like infuse it with a element of like a more realistic element of shit we went through when we were growing up.
I think, you know, it also reminded me, you know, because I do documentaries, and it reminds me a lot of Decline of Western Civilization, that sort of chaotic feel that was,
definitely,
you know, of that era. And I think he captured that really beautifully.
Thank you. That was definitely, Decline of Western Civilization and also Suburbia were like definitely two other like touchstone movies that we were thinking about when we were making it.
Oh, good. Called it.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens now? What are you working on now?
So now I have a couple projects that are in the works and hoping for the green light on them soon. But I have another project with Heather that we're hoping to go shortly, which is like a creepy boarding school movie.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
What do you have to say about in terms of like working with women in the industry? I mean, you've been lucky to work with Fessenden, who's actually really cool dude, and I love all his work. But, you know, it sounds like, you know, you found a niche working with women. And I think that it's so important right now for women, especially to be supporting each other in this industry.
Oh, 100%. I think, well, the first movie I produced was, this was actually really special and cool for me, that the first feature that I was a producer on was a movie called Most Beautiful Island, which is directed and starred Anna Asensio. And that's a movie about a girl who, you know, comes to New York, and she's an immigrant, and she doesn't have any papers or money, and she's just, like, struggling to survive. And tonally, it's totally different from The Ranger, but I think that there's a certain gritty element to both movies, and we were really able to get our hands all over both movies. So having that be my first experience making a film, like, side by side with this amazing filmmaker, Anna, was just so special. And then, getting to work with Heather and Ashley, like, it's just been awesome. And I think we all have to support each other, especially in this time right now. We're starting to see movement. We're starting to see, more female filmmakers getting exciting projects. But we have to keep pushing it, and we have to keep normalizing it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's been so few and far between. And, it's not like women haven't been doing it all these years. I mean, there have always been women filmmakers. But, they haven't gotten the recognition. You know, and a lot of times, you know, the bigger, you know, promotion or, you know, that they deserve. So I think we're starting to see a change that way. And I think, you know, also if we all sort of work towards helping each other rather than seeing it, you know, like the patriarchy, you know, it's not a competition, you know, we're a collective. We help each other.
Yeah.
I think, right? Totally.
I think that we all, like the patriarchy for a while, forever, has created this form of competition within us, where there only felt like there was space for one woman at a time. And yet you have all these dudes who are able to all have flourishing filmmaker careers and support each other. But for some reason, you can only have a single it girl at a time. And I'm glad that, you know, post Me Too movement, where it's like we're all getting out of that way of thinking, and we're all actively supporting each other and realizing, like, there's space for lots of women. And it's better for everybody, actually, if it's just a normalized thing.
And the films are better, you know, we're seeing, you know, just more representation, more diversity, more films, you know, people, you know, it's not like, you know, men can't enjoy films that women make, or, you know, we need to see it all. We need to see all the experiences. That's the whole point of art, you know, to share those experiences.
Exactly.
So what would you say to any woman aspiring to direct her first feature? Any advice?
I would say don't wait for permission. I would say do it. I think that just instinctively there's this feeling, especially among women, but maybe men too, maybe anybody starting out. But I think we're conditioned to think that we need to like wait for permission or something. I think that there's so many more young male filmmakers that just come out of film school with this audacity that they deserve to be making features. And I think more women should embrace that audacity and just fucking be like, no, my voice is important. And it's important for me to get my story out there. And actually it is important because like you said before, we've heard the same kind of story over and over and over again. And now we are in an exciting time because we're getting more diverse stories from filmmakers who previously hadn't been represented.
Yeah. As someone of a previous generation, I went to film school. I actually went to film school with Brian Singer. He went to my school for 1 year. And I remember him, you know, talking about, you know, just all the, you know, the connections. And I felt like, I don't want that. That's not why I'm making film. That's not what I'm doing. And not being able to, you know, see myself doing that. So I started doing documentary because, you know, it was, you know, something I could control. And I didn't need to have a crew because it was massively hard to get a crew together in film school because everyone was so competitive. Late 40s before I was like, you know what, these are the films I want to make. I'm just making them. If people like them, great. If they don't, that doesn't matter. I'm just going to make them. And I wish, you know, I had learned earlier, you know, right out of that film school that, like, you know, my vision is important and I have a right to make a film. And
yeah, and I really do think that idea goes back just in the like really subtle forms. These things that's emphasized to us. Like as we're growing up, we're supposed to be like nice and sweet and blah, 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 whatever. And we receive our sense of pride on like what men think of us. And
yeah.
So it's so tired, and so it's so exciting that in a mainstream way, that way of thinking is starting to feel really dated.
And to bring it back to punk rock, like punk is everything opposite to that. You know, like a lot of the bands, the punk bands I loved, you know, like the Slits, they were just like, hey, you know, we have no idea how to tune our instruments, but we're just going to fucking do it.
Holy.
You know, and they did it, and they were amazing.
And I think that kind of approach is just so important when you're like starting it, when you want to be a filmmaker. Like if it's important to you, you should just go out and fucking do it, figure it out, especially in this world we live in right now where everybody has a cell phone, everyone has an iPhone, you know, look at the movie Tangerine, they got a cool lens and then they made a movie on an iPhone. Like you can really start teaching yourself a lot with basic tools, and then it's a process, right? Like if you go out tomorrow and you don't have any experience making movies and you try to make a feature, it'll be really difficult. But if you make little things, if you make shorts, you know, it's a marathon. So if you're committing yourself to it for the long term, and you're like, no, this is what I care about. This is what's important to me. I want to dedicate myself to this art form. Then, you know, you'll do it, but don't let any of the emotional stuff, like the idea that you don't deserve to do it, get in the way.
Yeah, or that, you know, you're not good enough because it's always going to be imperfect. Every time I make a film, you know, I learn something, and that's just how it works, you know. You're like, oh,
totally.
I'll do this differently next time.
Totally. I think you need to embrace imperfection, and you need to embrace the learning experience, and you need to understand that every film is another stage of your journey, and you're constantly growing.
Yeah, I started backwards. I did a feature first, which was a nightmare. Yeah, 10-year feature. And after that, I was like, there was a period there for a couple years where I'm never making a film again. And then I started having ideas. And I'm like, well, maybe I'll just research this a little. And then next thing you know, I'm, you know, trying to do this other feature, and it fell apart. The editor sort of, you know, didn't work out. And my daughter, you know, said, why don't you just make a web series, Mom? And I'm like, that's a great idea. You know, 10 minutes, I can do 10 minutes. And
cool.
So that's what I've been doing, these little short pieces. And, you know, that it's workable for me. And, you know, I can put them online. Sometimes they show in festivals, but, I didn't have the resources to do a feature, and to get the resources, I had to make too many compromises.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's hard, and it's all very specific to the project, you know? Sometimes a story is better told as a web series or as a short film than as a feature or as a TV show. I mean, it's also cool to see that the idea of, you know, something having to be a certain amount of time, that is starting to feel like a dated concept too. It feels like we're starting to embrace the idea that a story is supposed to be what it takes to tell the story. And that goes, you know, that in terms of television also, we're seeing these like mini series that are, you know, 6 episodes long, and that's what they're supposed to be. That's what feels good.
Although it does break my heart when a show I love like gets canceled after 3 seasons.
Yeah.
You know, it's still no.
But it's cool. I mean, everything's changing. Our concepts of what the right and the wrong way to do things are starting to change, and that's exciting.
I think there's so many different avenues you can take to get your vision out there that, you know, you don't have to be limited by, you know, skill level or distribution or money or any of those things right now. You know, you just can, you know, take your phone and make a film and, you know, have 5 people watch it, have 5,000 people watch it, whatever.
Totally.
And smash the patriarchy.
Exactly.
Is there anything, I do want to say one last thing though, and then I'll let you go because I've already kept you. But, I normally, in films these days, I feel like because the budgets are so big that there's usually like a 15-minute padding in there that I could just do without, that like could be edited and the story would be fine. And I didn't feel that at all in The Ranger. There was no...
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we wanted to make it like a punk song, just like short and fast and in your face, and then you're out of there.
And you edited it as well, correct?
Yeah, I edited it, and then I had a co-editor, Abby Kilheffer, who's also the key grip on the set. So she and I were already super tight. She was already really familiar with the production because she was there. And she kind of came in and killed some of my darlings, and we made it just this really fast little roller coaster ride. But it was cool because, you know, it's an indie movie. The producers were all totally supportive of what I wanted to do with it. And, in Hollywood world, I guess there's more padding because there's more voices to, all have a say.
Yeah. But I think it's unnecessary. I just find like, you know, I don't need to, you know, there shouldn't be, if you make a $10 million movie, there shouldn't be 15 minutes that I'm bored in.
Yeah,
watching that.
I hate being bored in movies. So that was important to me, to make a movie that didn't just have any indulgent, like, boring moments.
And I love that it's like, you know, you have this vision, like, it's a punk song. So, like, it, you know, in timing, in pacing, in, you know, everything, you kept it to that. It's I love that concept. It's really clean and tight, and I like that. Good
job. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Is there anything else you'd want to add?
Is there
anything else I not, like, asked you about?
Oh, no. It's on Shudder right now, so everyone should go check it out. And, yeah, our record's coming out soon. And if you go to therangermovie.com, you can see all of the merch that you can own in your collection.
So is the record going to be the music from the movie?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the soundtrack.
Very cool. So I will definitely link to all your, you know, your information when I put up the episode. It'll probably be up next week. And, awesome. You know, if there's anything you want to shoot me to, you know, add to it, please do.
Okay, sounds good.
And thanks so much, and thanks for making such a great film. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. This was a lot of fun chatting. Thank you for checking it out and everything.
Okay, hope to chat again soon. Let me know when your next project is up, and we'll talk.
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
Okay. Have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Gurr and Fangirl. If you enjoyed our show, be sure to visit our website, www.squeeprojects.com, where you can subscribe to the podcast and our YouTube channel for lots more squee as fuck pop culture content.